Hey everyone, I'm Catherine Spires and this is Smart Mouth. Let me tell you about the social media. We are in a Facebook group. You can just search in the Facebook search bar for Smart Mouth, which is two words, and ask to join the group. Don't join the page unless you want to, but we don't really do anything there. Oh, and we are also on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast. And of course, Smart Mouth is on Patreon. I'd love to get your support as I set up the Smart Mouth e-newsletter, which will debut before the end of the year. I've started getting freelance submissions for that I'm really excited about. I think it's going to be a nice little digital publication. If anyone wants to check that out, check out the donor levels. It's at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. And I don't want anyone to think that I'm getting bored of it, of getting donors. I actually get a little bit misty-eyed still to this day whenever I get a new patron. This week's replay is with Scott Conant. You've seen him on TV. He's definitely one of those celebrity chefs. He's a judge on Chopped, among other things. And he has a number of Italian restaurants. He first started getting noticed for his pastas about 15 years ago. But in this episode, we talk about another carb and meat combo, dumplings. So listen, hear what happens when two very flirty people have a minor disagreement. If you enjoy Smart Mouth, please tell a friend. Now, on to the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's edition of Smart Mouth, the podcast where we find out more about our favorite people by talking about their favorite foods. And this week on the show, we have Scott Conant. He is a cook and a dad. And a restaurant owner of like a lot of restaurants coast to coast. Right now we are sitting in the Ponte, which is his newest restaurant in Los Angeles. Is this Los Angeles or West Hollywood?
It is technically Beverly Grove. Beverly Grove, yeah. But okay. It's kind of a little bit, I like to think of it a little more as West Hollywood.
Okay, right? You like that vibe better?
I mean, whatever. I'm from New York. What do I know?
Right.
You tell me.
You are from New York, but this is you've come over to the West Coast a couple of times now.
Yeah. I like it out here.
Do you?
Yeah. People are nice to me out here. I'll take it.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm a sensitive soul.
Oh no. And you went into cooking?
Yeah.
That's terrible. You made a bad choice.
Clearly.
Do you really feel that vibe difference between New York and Los Angeles?
Oh my God, yeah.
Really?
Of course. Well, there's an intensity to New York, and New York is unforgiving, you know?
Okay.
Truly, in every sense of the word. And you know, without sounding like Frank Sinatra, I always say, it's true. If you can make it in New York, you could pretty much make it anywhere. I believe that. And I think New Yorkers believe that. And I think that's the promise of New York, and that's why people move there to get ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So did you feel like, you probably didn't know it when you were just starting out, but you started working in New York. You rose up through the ranks pretty quickly.
No,
come
I didn't.
On. I feel like objectively you really did.
I got kicked around a lot. I'm actually from Connecticut, and I worked in Connecticut, Waterbury, Connecticut, mm-hmm. Which is an unfortunate place if you've ever been.
I haven't had the pleasure.
Yeah. No, it's okay. and I got out, which I was very... I'm still very proud of, but I still speak to all my friends from high school, and we still have a great relationship. It's like I never left. Uh-huh. I would say high school, that is. I mean, the same jokes all these years later. but the, you know, working in Connecticut, and I truly wanted to move closer to New York City because I felt like the closer I got to New York or into New York, the better the food got and the better experience I would get. And I just wanted to be able to identify with passionate cooking,
mm-hmm.
as a young cook. I was 18 when I moved there.
Yeah.
19 when I moved to New York City. And I got lucky. I started working in a really good restaurant and away it went.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good story. So you came up in New York, you got tossed around there a lot.
Yeah.
It was hard, but now you've got like places in Miami, Las Vegas, Los Angeles that are like a little more known for like their fun times attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think that, you know, Vegas in particular, Miami, all those restaurants, they're really, yeah, you're right. They're identified as fun time places, obviously. But I really feel like, you know, you can have your principles, your fine dining principles, so to speak, and put it in an environment where it's fun and easygoing and convivial,
mm-hmm.
And not sacrifice your standards. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was the intention of those restaurants when I built them.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, thanks.
And one of your more famous dishes is your spaghetti and tomato sauce.
Yes.
Would you call that your most famous dish?
I mean, it's not my dish. It's a spaghetti with tomato sauce. I mean, it's been made probably for centuries.
That's
at this
a good point.
Point.
But so, you have the audacity to put quite the price point on it, which is part of what gets it the attention.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I like to think that, you know, I'm a little biased in this situation.
Oh, no kidding?
As you can imagine.
Uh-huh.
So I want to preface the conversation with
that.
you get a lot with that. You know, when you start the meal here, you know, we'll have stromboli, the bread, the salami and smoked mozzarella bread kind of go around the dining room. People are served that. Those things cost money. So you have to build those costs into something. And obviously that pasta pomodoro, it's going to be the biggest seller no matter what, even if it didn't have the energy behind it that people speak about it so much.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think it's all good. As long as people are speaking about it. And the good news is, I would say 99% of the time, with all the hubbub around it, I sound like an old man. I said hubbub.
Hey, you know, it happens
really
to all of us.
Pathetic. with all the talk around it, 99% of the time, it really does exceed expectations, guest expectations. It doesn't get old. It really doesn't. I've been making that dish for a long time.
And people still love it.
They still eat it. I mean, I was just in the kitchen just now. I was talking to one of the sous chefs. We have to make 24 quarts of tomato sauce on a daily basis.
That's a lot of tomato sauce.
It's a lot of sauce.
Yeah.
Right or wrong. 6 gallons of sauce.
That's amazing.
A lot of sauce.
Yeah.
A lot of sauce.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, if people like it, then they like it. I haven't had the pleasure, but I've always heard amazing things about it. So.
Are you challenging me right now that you want me to go make you a spaghetti? Is that? I have a 3-piece suit on. I don't want to get tomato sauce on this thing.
You could go full Goodfellas and just take off your shirt and cook.
Wait, what kind of podcast is this?
It's called Smart Mouth, so it can really go in any direction. Anyway.
I should have prepared myself.
I know, yeah.
Stripping down.
But before we get to that, we should give the people what they want, which is a food topic of the day. And you said that you wanted to talk about dumplings.
I figure dumplings are as good a topic as any.
I mean, who doesn't love dumplings?
That's a good point. Who doesn't love dumplings? And if there's someone who doesn't, I don't want to know that person.
I know, right? Seriously, it's a good indicator.
I mean, seriously.
So
get lost.
Because, and one of the reasons that we know that everybody loves dumplings is because everyone has them to the point. I mean, every inhabited continent, probably every country has like their own dumpling tradition.
Yeah.
I realized that I was having a hard time defining dumplings.
I'm not sure if there's a definition, and that's kind of the fun of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it just like the word fun, it means something different for everybody.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know how deep we can go here if we could use foul language, but
you can use all the foul language you want. Yeah.
Because, you know, years ago, my brother had a company and they would have, he had a video company. And one guy came in with a VHS, clearly dating myself. I don't even know what the letters are anymore. Anyway, and you may want to edit this out at some point, but we'll get there. But anyway, so he said, I need copies of this VHS tape. As my brother was kind of having it on loop, being copied onto another tape, it was a video of this guy, the guy who dropped off, being kicked in the balls by a woman in a random New York City hotel room. And this is my point of fun means different things to everybody.
Yeah, it does.
Just like dumplings.
You scandalized Stephen. By the way, I forgot to announce that our guest producer today is Stephen Ray Morris of the Purrcast and My Favorite Murder, and he is deeply offended.
I don't know.
He's already ruined it for
blushing.
I know.
And my goodness. I could tell that story again with a French accent if you'd like.
Yeah.
It's getting hot. It's getting hot in here. Anyway.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's true. Different fun and different dumplings for every person. I wonder what kind of dumplings that guy likes.
I mean, I'm not one to judge. I'm not proud of all the things I've done, but I've never done that. Yeah. I'll tell you that much.
I mean,
that
it's doesn't niche. Sound like fun. I think it's niche.
Jesus.
I bet more people like dumplings than like getting kicked in the balls.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Well, I'll tell you, if I were walking down the street and someone handed me a plate of dumplings, if I had a choice, a plate of dumplings, regardless of the cultural background of those dumplings or being kicked in the balls, I would probably choose the dumplings.
Every time, I would say. I mean, oh, boy.
Anyway.
So I thought that moving along to more PG topics.
Really went off the rails quickly.
It's good. No, that's what podcasting is all about, right?
I wouldn't know, but yeah.
Well, now you do.
Yeah.
Geez, this is fun. You're really diving in.
We need to do this more often.
I would say so. So I thought that if something was a dumpling, that meant that it had a filling in the dough. But I'm learning more and more that so many cultures, dumpling is just like dough. And I thought maybe you would be able to speak more to that because it seems like it's more of a Northern and Central European tradition to consider a dumpling the dough. And you studied pastry in Germany.
I did. And we would make dumplings so there's sweet dumplings, obviously. And there's even in the north of Italy and in kind of in the Friuli Veneto area, there's potato, like kind of like a potato dumpling, which is filled with a sweet plum. And they could be either savory or they can be a dessert, which is interesting. I apologize for the sounds behind us. As I said, we're in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I like to think of those kitchen sounds as ambient noise,
Let's go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go yell at them if you want.
No. Up. It's fine. We are in a restaurant. Indeed.
I'm sorry. Good.
So now you're also introducing the idea of sweet dumplings into the mix, which... You said obviously, but actually that was something that I don't think I really understood until a friend of mine who's a food writer would talk about just wrapping whole apples in dough, and that counts as a dumpling.
Really?
Yeah.
Whole apples?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like a dumpling to
okay,
me.
Okay, so we're starting to like define our terms.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to come to any definitive agreement on what a dumpling is by the end of the day.
Yeah, you're probably right. Do you think a pupusa is a dumpling?
I like the way you say it, though. No, I think I would think of that more as an empanada, right?
You mean an empanada is more of a dumpling than a pupusa is? A pupusa is more of an empanada, but isn't an empanada a dumpling?
No.
Oh.
No.
Strongly held opinions over here.
I don't think so.
Fair enough.
Damn it. By the way, this is what we do at the judges' table on Chopped pretty much all day.
Yeah.
These are the conversations we have, which amounts to pretty much nothing except a lot of frustration with one another.
Do you guys get mad?
Oh, my God.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Do they? I mean, I've watched a lot of episodes of Chopped, but have you guys ever have gotten too intense for it to actually air?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Well, yeah. We've had chefs walk off set. Where they've had to be calmed down.
Really?
I'm not going to name names. We've had situations where two of the judges just will stop speaking, and the third judge, which is probably me, it will have to kind of pick up the slack with Ted, and just the other two sitting there, like angry.
And it's all close up shots of you.
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Does Ted maintain his composure the entire
Ted
time?
Ted is probably one of the most, if not the most professional person I've ever worked with. He is always, always in the game. And I would say that I am, however, probably the least professional because
really?
I joke around and I tell jokes and I clearly have a very filthy sense of humor. And to the point sometimes where Ted is like, would you stop? Would you stop, please?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. And then I feel horrible afterwards because I think I'm being funny. But the problem is when you're the only person who thinks you're funny. Then you become the source of the problem.
I guess so.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, at least you're self-aware about it. And that's half the battle, perhaps.
Healthy sense of guilt. I grew up Catholic.
I feel you. I get that a lot. Speaking of, I don't know, guilt. That's a weird transition, but I've noticed that I feel like in the European tradition of dumplings, they talk about how it was made to make meat go further and, make dinner for more people, which is so different than what I feel like the Asian dumpling tradition is, which is where the dumplings are usually like special occasion food.
Yes.
And why is it that the European tradition is like, well, everyone was poor, so they had to put the meat in the dough to make it a heartier meal.
Yeah. I don't know. I wish I had an answer to that, but that's really interesting. Is that, you know, if you think about it, really dumplings, Asian dumplings are a little bit very similar to a ravioli. Ravioli, Krapfen in Austria and Germany. I'm not sure if, you know, Northern Europe has a kind of a ravioli tradition, but things morph into different things. I think that my experience with dumplings in the European tradition, not necessarily outside of Italy, it seems to me like it's more an accompaniment with a protein.
Right?
Less about what's inside those dumplings.
Yeah, because there's two things that I noticed. Mm-hmm. One, in Germany, the word for dumpling, not all the time, but it often is, I don't know how to pronounce it, knödel, which is obviously...
Knödel. I used to live in Germany. So yeah, knödel.
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 Then that's
which
how
is
you
fun to say.
It?
Knödel.
Like
yeah.
Knödeling, but it, totally different.
I mean, whatever you're into.
Do you know I actually have German citizenship, but I don't understand
really?
How to pronounce any of the words?
That's
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would love you there.
Really?
Just no. If you don't speak German in Germany, forget about it.
Oh, all my
As
hopes
we
and
say,
dreams.
Forget about it. As we say in my country. Seriously, you can take the guy out of Waterbury. You can't take the Waterbury out of the guy.
Well... It looks like noodle, and clearly it's related, I think, especially...
It's with a K. I don't see what you're looking at, but it's with a K. Knödel. Yeah, mm-hmm. Knödel. A knödel. So a semolknödel or a kartoffelknödel, a potato knödel,
mm-hmm.
Those are like little balls. They're kind of like matzah balls, but they don't have the bread product in it.
Okay.
Like knödels have a bread product, obviously. So semolknödel is a bread dumpling. Basically, and they're delicious. There's also bone marrow knödels, like little dumplings, little bone marrow dumplings.
Oh,
which one of the reasons why I chose this topic to speak about is because I always recommend someone making a dumpling on Chopped, whether it be a ravioli or something along those lines, because I think that it's an underserved. First of all, they're super easy to make, mm-hmm. number one, and it's an underserved market. And who doesn't love a dumpling, a knödel, or a krapfen, as the case may be.
Yeah.
Or a ravioli.
Yeah.
Or Asian dumplings.
Is the word pronounced spätzle?
Spätzle, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Spätzle. People say spätzle.
Americans?
Call it whatever you want. As long as you keep smiling, I mean, who cares?
So would you consider that a dumpling?
Technically, I think that is a dumpling.
Which
yeah.
is so weird because you just press, it's basically extruded dough right into the boiling water.
Yeah, the idea is that with a spätzle maker, it's kind of pressed through this and they fall into the water. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a flour dough. So they fall into the water and, I love spätzle. I just think it's special. So I always have some kind of a spätzle dish on a menu for the most part. Not always, but often always. I kind of love the texture of spätzle.
Okay.
There's something about it. Some people crisp them up. I don't. I just opened a new restaurant in New York and it's the first time I've ever decidedly crisp them a little bit because I think that there's a textural contrast. I serve them with short ribs that I really like.
That sounds good. Yeah.
It's a good dish.
Yeah.
And we do them with tarragon and a little bit of a fava bean salsa verde and a touch of fresh horseradish with it. So it's just kind of a lot of... You can have it. That's
I make
fine.
It today yeah. after you make the pasta.
Yes, chef.
Did you know that there is a dumpling museum in Germany?
I did not know that. What city is it in?
It was some small town that probably it's the only thing that
they've
got.
That's the only thing going on.
Yeah.
Everyone is employed at the dumpling museum.
But it is the only dumpling museum on record, at least, in the world. So
there's not a dumpling museum in somewhere in China?
You would think. There probably is somewhere in all of China.
We should start some kind of a Kickstarter campaign and get it going.
I love that idea.
Right? Let's do it.
All right.
We'll call some people.
Oh my gosh, we have so much we have to do today now.
Oh my God, I'm exhausted. Can I take a nap first?
All right, but only a short one. Chicken and dumplings, which is a classic Southern dish that really comes from a German tradition of having dumplings alongside the meat.
Yeah.
And we often think of, I think in the American consciousness right now, when we think of Southern food, we're thinking food that has a background of being for in times of want, like make-do type food. But we forget that chicken used to be the most expensive meat to buy in the United States. So chicken and dumplings is actually a very upscale dish.
I did not know that. Yeah. I like the way you're connecting all the dots. I feel like the puzzle is coming together. That's good.
Good.
That's
I'm
good
glad.
To know.
Yeah, you know the saying, a chicken in every pot?
Yes.
So that was to indicate you would be so wealthy that you could eat chicken every day.
Where did you learn this?
From my learnings.
Are you just making it up?
I learned it from my learnings.
I feel like you're kind of making it up.
No.
It's a great story. I'm happy to go with it.
No, I didn't make
Let's
it up.
Let's make something else up and just spread rumors.
No, because I have to be seen as a smarty pants.
You're very intelligent, much more intelligent than I am. I appreciate the learning. I really do.
Okay.
So the chicken,
I mean, you've only
chicken
known me for
15 every
minutes, but
but it feels like a lifetime in a good way. You sat in the front of the class in school, didn't you?
Oh, big time.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. I was that guy. But I never sat in the last seat. It was the second to last seat.
Okay.
Always on the right side of
Bare
the
Bare minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, but chicken was, it was, I'm not making it up, before it was an industrialized food. Yeah. It was, I think, because they're so small, and so they're expensive.
Oh, no, they're difficult to catch as well. Did you ever see Rocky? I mean, it looked like they were tough to catch in that movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't chase chickens
you
around.
You get it.
I totally get it.
So you would consider ravioli to be a dumpling?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
But empanadas aren't dumplings?
No, because empanadas aren't necessarily cooked in a broth, right? They're either fried or baked.
So you're talking about boiling? Is that the definition?
I'm not sure it's totally the definition, but that's what I'm going to go with until something else reveals itself.
Right, right. I think that's fair.
Is that fair?
I think you can just make up your own definition of it.
That's what I'm doing so far. And
okay.
I'm so far I'm comfortable with it until I'm not.
Well, okay. So we're going
to
move on to the Asian tradition, and I'm just thinking about the process of cooking, like
those are
gyoza.
Steamed. Yeah.
But then pan fried, not always, but often after the steaming.
Yeah. But you don't pan fry an empanada.
Right.
Would you consider an empanada a dumpling?
I think I would.
Really?
But I'm also
It's more of a turnover, no?
See, I'm coming from, this might actually be an East Coast, West Coast difference, where your food traditions are more influenced by Europe. And I've lived on the West Coast my whole life, so yeah. I know more about Asian food. And so when I think dumpling, I think, like I said earlier, something that has meat in
yeah.
it. This is why this thing where it seems like they're just calling noodles dumplings. I'm like, what? What is this?
Noodles. Well spätzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough one,
Let's
right?
talk about something else. I need to drink more coffee if this is going to continue.
Well, it gets pretty easy from here on out, I promise. Basically just that Asia has a longer dumpling tradition than Europe does.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that pasta came from Asia, not from Italy?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think that.
You've learned otherwise.
Yes.
Do you think that it came from Italy?
I think that pasta, what we think of as pasta, yeah, that came from Italy. But I also think that it's not crazy to think of grinding wheat into flour and adding water to it.
Yeah. It seems like we could kind of live on a parallel level in the sense that noodles can come from multiple places. No one culture necessarily has to be responsible for these things. It seems to me, at least in my readings, that both Asia and Europe were on similar paths identifying noodles, if you will, or pasta.
Yeah, I think so. I might be getting the details of it wrong, but there is some point that really drove it home to me about how people tell the stories about Marco Polo going to China and bringing back noodles, except for that he had a word for noodles before he went to China, which means that they were in Italy.
Seemed like a brave man, that Marco Polo.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure.
I'm going to Asia. And there's no plane to take you there. That seems brave.
Explorers back then were way braver than explorers now. No smartphones.
Are there explorers these days? Because the idea of exploring now is like, oh, I've just landed in Berlin and I'm going to go explore. Right? That seems a little fake. That's not a real explorer. There should be another word for that.
Oh.
You're very smart.
I think that's called vacation.
Yeah, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
I'm on holiday.
Yeah.
I'm going to search for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to explore the neighborhood.
Gold, cups of coffee, whatever. It's all exciting.
That's a good point. Yeah, I agree.
So would you say that, no, before I ask this question, I want to get more Asian dumplings into your head. Are you familiar with Xiaolongbao, the soupy dumplings?
Yes. Delicious.
Okay. Love those.
Yes.
I was thinking that those might be one of my favorite dumplings
probably
on the whole planet.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Chris Santos, makes an onion soup dumpling, which is, you know, those soup dumplings with an onion soup inside.
Interesting.
Very clever, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's clever.
Okay.
That son of a... Yeah. So those are super difficult to make.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, a lot of gelatin in the broth.
So much gelatin.
And then you have to freeze them also, which is another challenge. Go directly into the water and they have to, you know, cook that way. Those are boiled, not steamed, correct?
No, those are steamed.
They're steamed as mm-hmm. well. Yeah. So that's a challenge, steaming all that stuff.
And it's clearly not like a food extender issue. This is like Chinese imperial cuisine where it was all about luxury. These dumplings were not meant to be saving anyone any money.
Messy.
So messy. And you have to be really careful when you eat them.
Also, they're hot as hell. And you could burn yourself.
Yeah. They're terrifying.
And I know this from experience.
Did you burn yourself?
I have. Aww. Yeah. All over my... One time I was on a date years ago and we had soy sauce and I literally had a white shirt on and I spilled soy sauce all down the front of my... You want to talk about mortified?
Yeah.
I'm still in therapy about that.
Did you learn not to wear white on like first dates, at least the first
No, I just
dates.
Learned to be more careful.
Oh, that's a good lesson too.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Have you ever had momos, which are Tibetan dumplings?
I have not. They sound delicious. What is that?
They're amazing. The dough is kind of thick. I've had them in China and I was eating yak momos. Turns out yak meat is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that. Feel kind of weird about that. But also apparently MSG is added to momos, which explains why they're the most delicious thing I've ever had.
Yeah. So is it shredded meat?
More of
inside
a mince.
The thick dumplings, mm-hmm. minced meat. Mm-hmm. Is there a sauce that kind of binds it together?
Not within, but it's often served with a sort of chutney, sort of a looser chutney, tomato-based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tomato-based chutney. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
You should find them.
You know, I've always been inspired by Asian dumplings in my stuffed pastas.
Yeah?
I've always found it to be, you know, there's only so many ricotta ravioli that you can make.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? There's only so many versions and variations of that. But somehow, some way, I feel like a lot of Chinese dumplings, in this case, Tibetan dumplings, there's just so much, there's a broader scope, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be able to work within. And I think that being inspired by those things is kind of the fun of it all, right? And then to be able to apply Italian principles of cooking to those Asian ingredients and kind of make it your own is something that really, as a chef, as a cook, that's how you keep it moving.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
otherwise
great.
You're just cooking the same things over and over again.
Do you think there's art to what you do?
You know, it sounds so pretentious to say that, right? I mean, I would say there's a discipline, and I would say that there's a whimsical aspect to it. Whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
But to say there's an artistry, I would say, maybe not an art. Right?
Okay.
It sounds so pretentious say there's an art.
Are you avoiding saying art because you don't want to be pretentious?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't think that it's art. I think there's an artistic element to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think of myself as an artist.
Okay.
Oh my God, no. That's so pretentious.
Well, I was thinking about the title.
By the way, I'm not afraid to give myself a compliment. Just so you know.
Okay.
That's why I got me. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. Well, that's
happy
good.
Happy to give myself compliments.
Tell me what, in practice, this is like a question for lay people who are interested in the restaurant industry. What does an executive chef do?
You know, titles are strange things,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it depends on the restaurant that you're in or in the hotel. Everybody has their roles and responsibilities. And I think ultimately an executive chef should help create or keep the staff on track of executing a vision.
Okay.
As a chef owner, my job is to be able is to create the vision for that restaurant,
mm-hmm.
whether it be from a service perspective, the vibe of the mood of the restaurant, as well as how the food fits into that vibe, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes an executive chef, I have executive chefs and chef de cuisine inside various restaurants, depending on the
restaurant.
And
chef de cuisine do more of the actual cooking, day-to-day cooking, right?
Chef de cuisine is I mean, yeah, the chef de cuisine is normally the person who's kind of a step above the sous chef, mm-hmm. so that you're kind of focused really on food quality. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be the...
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds fair.
It's all... You know what? But the way I see it is, yes, those are titles, but we're all a team. Mm-hmm. And you need to, you know, I wash dishes sometimes if I have to. I sweep the floor if I have to. That's not necessarily under the heading of a chef owner. You know
how
what
many
I mean?
Times a year do you think you sweep a floor at a restaurant?
If I'm in a restaurant for a week straight, I'll probably sweep it every day, at least to prove a point.
At
the very least, to prove a point, until somebody runs up and takes the broom away from, you know what I mean?
Got it. Makes sense. Yeah. You must travel all the time.
Pretty much.
Is it exhausting or is it fun?
It is. You know, the hardest thing is being away from my family.
Yeah.
My wife and kids live in Scottsdale. So I go home as often as I can, but not as often as I'd like to be there.
Right.
I really feel like we moved to Scottsdale in July, and living in Scottsdale is like being on vacation after having been 27 years in New York City.
But even in July?
The goal is to not be there in July and August.
Yikes.
Yeah. We'll leave in June and then go back in the beginning of August. Yeah.
Okay.
Because the girls start school in the first week of August.
Was Scottsdale a choice so that you could feel like you were retired whenever you're at home?
Not retired, because I didn't move there to retire.
Well, clearly.
There's tremendous business opportunities in Scottsdale.
Okay. So, strategic choice.
Do you hear someone singing in the kitchen?
I do.
Somebody's singing poorly as well.
Whatever inspires them. If they're cooking and this is what makes them cook better, you're into it, right?
No.
Oh, all right. That German training is coming through.
Would you like me to ask them to stop, or do you want to keep them singing along?
That's great.
They could whistle while they work.
Exactly. So you can have two choices. What are your two favorite dumplings in the whole wide world of dumplings?
Oh, my God. That's hard to say.
You can make it up. No one will.
I will. I will make it up. Mm-hmm. A good nudie, I feel like, is really special. April Bloomfield in New York City at
the Spotted Pig.
I couldn't remember her name. The name of the restaurant escaped me. Those nudie are just like,
yeah.
They're sexy.
Does she spell them with a G? G-N-U-D-I.
I don't know how she spells them. I think that's how they're meant to be spelled.
And are those a potato dumpling? Or
it's a ricotta or a cheese dumpling.
That's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Gnocchi are the potato ones.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, some people call them a ricotta gnocchi.
Okay.
As opposed to a nudie. It depends. I mean, there's whatever. You know, call it whatever you want.
It's also fun to say nudie.
I call
nudie.
It delicious.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
Do you have another one, or is that the end all be all?
I think that's the Italian version that I love the most. I think that a really good matzo ball, like a good matzo ball, is delicious as well. But I think some kind of an Asian dumpling would be, you know, like a steamed pork dumpling.
Yeah,
it's just like delicious.
Yeah.
We went to the place across the street yesterday called Bao, I think it's the name of it, mm-hmm. and it's really good. I was really pleased with the dumplings there.
Nice.
Wonderful. So delicious.
Do people recognize you when you go out to dinner, or only at the high-end places?
Yeah, people recognize. Yeah, it's nice. It's fun. I remember when I would go places and nobody cared, so I'll take
that. Oh, that's nice. But do you see like terror in their eyes?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm a nice guy.
It doesn't matter. Lots of people are nice.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing. I imagine that if a very famous chef came into your restaurant, you'd maybe piss yourself just a little.
No, you know who's the top of the totem pole? You know, probably Gordon, right? Or Alain Ducasse. You know, the New York guys, Danielle or Eric Appert or Jean-Georges, right? Those are the top of the totem pole, I would say.
Okay, that seems fair.
Right?
But of the people you mentioned, I think Gordon Ramsay is the only recognizable one.
You don't think Alain Ducasse is recognizable?
No.
Really?
No. I mean, in terms of like face recognition, who they are as chefs.
Really? This is a cheap.
I mean, in terms
tough.
Of recognizing their faces, that's all I meant. TV
I
presence.
I will say this. So Gordon came in to, he used to go to Vegas all the time.
Okay.
He came up to me and said, you know, you have the best Italian restaurant in the country. And I said, I'm gonna quote you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's okay. So here I am quoting him on that. And Dukas came up to me at one point, and I was a nervous wreck to cook for him. This was years ago. And he said, "I like your cuisine." And I said, "I'm also going to quote you on that." He said, I'm sorry, I don't speak English. He didn't say, I'm just kidding. He did say he liked my cuisine, which was very nice. Yeah, so I you know, I get the idea, but I don't think of myself like that. Like I'm just happy to be out of the house for the most part.
Doing something.
happy to be able to afford dinner.
Right.
That's nice.
Right.
But that wasn't always the case.
Yeah.
It's all good. I'm just happy to be there.
Are there any chefs right now that are up and comers that you think are gonna really go far?
Jamie Bissonette, I think he's in Boston and New York City. He's just a class act. I really like him a lot. I really like what he does. There's too many to name, and I'm really bad at names. So
okay. I won't put you on the spot.
If you show me a bunch of pictures of people, I'll point to you who they are.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Angie Marr is crushing it at Beatrice Inn in New York City. I think she's power.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, thank you so much.
That's it. We're done.
Us. Yeah.
That was cool.
We figured out dumplings. Well, what we figured out is that everyone has their own definition of it.
And I still don't think that empanada is a dumpling.
I know. I think we're just going to have to end this in a fight. What are you going to do? It happens.
I don't like fighting. You could win.
Okay.
I'll let you win.
I like that too.
Even if I disagree.
Where should people find you on social media and all that kind of stuff?
I am Instagram, Twitter, at Conant NYC, Conant NYC. And I also just opened a new place in New York City called Fusco, New York. So it's at Fusco, New York, on Instagram and Twitter and, Facebook, Scott Conant. That's
awesome.
Me. Good stuff.
Thank you so much for joining us on Smart Mouth.
This is fun. Thank you.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
A Table Cakes production.